popcorn, grab your favorite beverage, and get ready to celebrate local filmmakers with the 13th Annual Sundial Film Festival. Happening March 6th, the Sundial Film Festival is presented by the Active 2030 Club of Reading. The event has gone virtual this year, so you can enjoy the array of films from the comfort of your own home. It's free to view the Sundial Film Festival happening March 6th at 6 p.m. All you have to do is go to sundialfilmfestival.com and RSVP. The 13th Annual Sundial Film Festival happening March 6th online at sundialfilmfestival.com.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of the Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at estategranite.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time is coming for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 1460.com.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. Boy, was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
It's never too late to achieve your dream, to turn a skill into a career. At Shasta College, we have late start classes right now and online classes where the commute from the couch to the class has never been easier. We're also offering 8-week compressed classes, same units, half the time. Now is the right time to upskill or reskill for high-demand jobs employers are hiring for. Find out more. Visit ShastaCollege.edu today. Pulse Surgeon Care at 100 East Cypress Avenue would like to thank you for your support during 2020. Pulse is happy to announce they are reopening their urgent care services and are accepting patients by appointment only between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. on weekdays and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays. Pulse follows public health guidelines. Masks are required along with social distancing. Please call ahead at 530-722-1111 for a screening, appointment, and further information.
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. It's growing time for the Trees of Heavenly Light. They are also known as Chinese locust trees, trees of heaven, China sumac. They are native to China but are found in many places in Shasta County, especially the areas of the 1849 gold rush where the Chinese lived and mined. Archaeologists believe seeds of the trees were innocently brought here by the Chinese miners in their hats and mats. Once they got hold, they multiplied and multiplied. They have a good root system. It's hard to stop because it sends out runners in every direction. The young shoots look like giant asparagus, but quickly put out leaves. The young trees have an odor that many find offensive. These trees can be found by the thousands in the town of Shasta throughout the gold mining districts and in many places where you wouldn't expect them. This moment in history was brought to you by KCNR and Shasta County historian Dottie Smith. For more stories like this or exciting books by Dottie, find Dottie Smith on Amazon Books or go to the Shasta County Historical Society.
KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com. Don't miss Free Fire Radio weekday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. From noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal to riding routes, pop culture, and unsung heroes in the North State. From 7 to 10, tune into Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. KCNR also has an incredible weekend lineup, including The Flatline, Jefferson State of Mind, Sovereign Minds, and We the People on KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Zip on over to Drip, now open at 2766 Falls Ferry Road in Anderson, next to Anytime Fitness. Drip features healthy and delicious drinks and shakes. Drip offers energy teas packed with antioxidants, delicious full meal replacement shakes, coffee loaded with protein, power oats, energy drinks, and so much more. Drip is open Monday through Friday from 7 to 7 and weekends 8 to 4. Stop by today, 2766 Falls Ferry Road in Anderson. Zip on over to Drip.
Hi, I'm Liz Ponce. We at Lassen Canyon Nursery love to support the Shasta County Farm Bureau, Shasta District Fair, and the Haven Humane Society, just to name a few nonprofits that are dear to our hearts. We are proud to live in a community that celebrates unsung heroes who give back, and we invite you to give where your heart is to help build a stronger community together. Please remember to visit Lassen Canyon Nursery before you plant your strawberry patch this spring.
Yeah, we'll be counting stars.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of the Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to in North State with no more homeless pets.
Why wait for summer? Gear up for some fun right here in our own backyard and head down to Wind River Resort and Casino to play our
Gear Up 2021 Swipe to Win promotion.
Drawings Thursdays at 6, 7, 8, and 9 p.m. All winners receive bonus entries into the final drawings on February 25th.
Two motorcycles and a Can-Am quad.
And March 25th, a Yamaha ski boat.
From Reading, Yamaha Ski-Doo.
Join us for a safe, comfortable, and fun gaming experience at Wind River Resort and Casino. More drawings, more winners, more fun.
WinRiver.com.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance is now open at 3673 Eureka Way. Physical therapists Kevin Elo and Rachel Lang have a combined 29 years of experience in helping those who've suffered orthopedic injuries, strains, and sprains. Kevin has worked with the USA Gymnastics team, NFL Combine, and professional BMX riders. He's also helped members of Cirque du Soleil get back into action. Rachel works closely with seniors and is also a group fitness instructor and adept at returning people to an active lifestyle. Both Kevin and Rachel at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance are accepting new clients. Give them a call today, 530-533-5030. If you are in need of physical therapy, talk to the experts at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance at 3673 Eureka Way. Call 530-533-5030. That's 530-533-5030 today.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Hi, I'm Sue Blake with Powerhouse Solar. Solar energy not only makes financial sense, but right now you can go solar for zero money down. At Powerhouse Solar, we install the most cost-effective and highest efficiency panels from SunPower. And with the electric company's rolling blackouts, Powerhouse Solar can make sure your family is not left in the dark. We have generators and battery backup systems designed for your specific needs. Call Powerhouse Solar today at 275-5600 or visit us on the web at powerhousesolar.com.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Go not to the elves for counsel, for they will say both no and yes. J.R.R. Tolkien.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hole.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Our monster of the day. These can really be true monsters. It's the Fae. Those tricky buggers.
We're talking not only fairies, but elves, pixies, sometimes gnomes are considered fae. There are a lot of creatures that are vaguely humanoid with a little bit of a magical twist and often have a very druidic nature in their style of magic. So we are calling them as a super category fae.
With the fae usually comes an almost human appearance. They have the same general shape. They're a humanoid. But there's something different. There's something magical, mystical about them.
A lot of times they're the people who wield the plant-type magic. So if you go into a fae kind of realm, they have their own homelands in a way. And they have interesting light. They are associated with interesting kinds of lighting styles and plants-based architecture. Bridges that are made out of vines and life in the trees and that kind of thing. Most of our monsters are going to be either animalistic or way above humans or a dumb version of humans. The Fae tend to be almost equivalent, if not for their longevity. And therefore, they're able to be a little wiser in a lot of respects.
But the definition and the traditions of what fae are have changed and developed so much over the years. So in the 16th century, you had a philosopher, alchemist, toxicologist named Paracelsus who classified elves and gnomes as spirits of the air. And that's definitely not what we picture today when we think of elves and gnomes.
I think, like our opener quote kind of implied, Tolkien has redefined what elves are for us. Until Tolkien, almost everybody thought of elves as being anywhere between child size to the size of your fist.
Tinkerbell size.
Yeah.
But now we picture elves as tall, elegant, graceful, walking beings because Tolkien redefined the word.
And I think a lot of the references that I hear to elves in my personal life end up coming through Dungeons and Dragons. They have a very Tolkien style of elf, although I do believe in the version I play they're slightly shorter than humans.
It depends on the kind of elf. Going back to EverQuest, which was the first, like, digital version of D&D, this is where I got my definitions of elves. You had the high elves, which were very Tolkien-esque, tall, elegant elves. You had wood elves that were the shorter, more druidic-based elves. And then night elves, which are in D&D drow.
And if you wanted to listen to another episode talking about the character of elves, we did kind of mention this style in our Shoulder Angels episode, which was back in February, where we talked about the id, ego, super ego. A lot of this super ego stuff gets applied to elves. And that's why I am including Vulcans in the elf, mostly in just modern mythology.
They're space elves.
They play basically the same role in the story.
You go back in history, and elves are more like Santa's elves. Small creatures there to help, or Harry Potter's house elves, where they're helpers, they're servants in some kind of way. But elves aren't the only fae out there.
Probably my favorite are the Tinkerbell pixie type elves in the movie Willow. They were called brownies. The little guys that just kind of make mischief. They'll move stuff around and they'll maybe cast little bits of magic here and there, and they can disappear and reappear. They apparently have a huge hankering for cream. They like get drunk off of fresh cream.
So you have your fairies, pixies, brownies. These are very Celtic in origin. There's a lot of those associations where you can throw out a handful of salt and they have to count every single bit of salt that fell.
That's how you catch a pixie, if you're curious.
Yeah.
And if you want more research on that, there's a fantastic Supernatural episode. It's great.
Fight the fairies! So you also have things like gnomes. Our definition of gnomes in the nerd world are different than the definition of gnomes in a lot of the normal world, because you have gnomes as in, like, World of Warcraft D&D gnomes, and then you have garden gnomes. They're very different.
But gnomes tend to be even smaller than normally a childlike house elf, and that's, I think, size is a big difference between gnomes and dwarves. But they enjoy the non-living parts of the earth, mostly gems and that kind of thing.
In a lot of, like, D&D type culture, they are associated with the tinkerers. They're the steampunk characters that are creating the mechanical what's-its that might just explode.
One of my fondest images of elves and the fae in general actually comes from Shakespeare. If you've ever seen A Midsummer Night's Dream, basically they get lost in the woods and this fairy queen comes and takes them on this adventure that they go on. And it's all very mystical and magical, and everyone portrays it slightly different, which is one of my favorite things about Shakespeare, is you'll never see the same Shakespeare twice.
You also have a lot of fae represented in Arthurian traditions. Prince Arthur and the Fairy Queen, if you've seen the recent Netflix show Cursed, it's a different representation of the fae and magical beings with King Arthur before he was King Arthur.
And I think Witcher had some references to elves in a way that is not commonly seen nowadays. They weren't the tall, elegant, must-be-respected kind of characters. So that was an interesting look at those characters.
Most of the ones we've been talking about are usually benign. Sometimes tricksters, sometimes out just to have a little bit of fun. But then you have some that are just straight up evil.
The Red Cap is basically an evil version of the gnome. They can be tamed, but mostly just by evil people, into becoming something between an ally and a pet.
One of the ones you may think of first would be the changelings. This was seen in the show and book series Outlander. The idea that these beings will switch out a infant child with a changeling child, and they'll kill the human child and force the humans to raise the changeling child so that they don't have to do it.
And in order to deal with the changeling, if it happens soon enough, they might be willing to, like, trade the child back. If you manage to figure out that it's not your kid before they kill your actual kid.
You also have Will-o'-the-Wisps, and these are represented very differently in a lot of different media. So you have Brave, where the Will-o'-the-Wisps are treated more like light beings that are just leading her toward her destiny. But in a lot of classic traditions, if you followed the Will-o'-the-Wisp, you would die.
They often hung out around bogs and swamps. So if you followed this light, you would end up stuck in this bog and you would die there.
Historical basis for this. what actually was happening were gases from the swamp or bog lighting on fire, and it would just kind of flash and people would follow it and fall into the swamp. Like, that's what actually was happening. One of the biggest questions with the Fae is, how do you deal with them?
We mentioned earlier throwing salt on the ground will stall them, so they have to stand there and count every single one.
A lot of the classic interpretations make Fae really vulnerable to iron. Like, it'll burn their skin if they touch it.
But mostly, I think the best way to deal with them is to just don't deal with them.
Avoid them and never make a deal with a fairy.
Absolutely. That's where a bit of the trickster magic comes in, which is very indicative of the fairies and the pixies.
So if you are interested in writing fairies, writing the fae into your story, remember that you aren't limited to what you've seen before. These traditions have changed and developed and become something completely new over the centuries. Pull from whatever part of it you want. That's what makes this fun.
I think Fae will end up being a fantastic addition to a fantasy-type world. They're one of those monsters that are incredibly social. They have that whole culture to themselves, that they're doing their own thing. So it's easy to put a drop in. Your readers get an idea of, oh, the world is enormous, but they have enough of an idea to just sort of set that concept aside. But of course, writing elves are also a lot of fun. And that's what it comes down to, really, is having fun with it and
writing selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
The cost of a thing is the amount of what I will call life, which is required to be exchanged for it, immediately or in the long run. Henry David Thoreau.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Before we get into our question of the day, I want to remind you guys that we are on Patreon if you guys want to support us. Help us out. Let us keep creating these episodes. Go there for as little as $10 a month, which is basically a dollar an episode. You can help keep this podcast going.
Speaking of money, what is our question for today?
How do you set the price for a book?
I'm going to write a book saying how to make $1 million, and then I'm going to price my book at $1 million so that if I sell one, I'll have made $1 million.
Not a good plan. Mostly because the people with $1 million are not likely going to be looking to make $1 million.
Or maybe they'll buy 2 books so they can have $2 million.
Still not working.
So, obviously, we're just teasing here. But it is a legitimate question that a lot of especially first-time self-published authors will ask. How do I set the price for my book? I obviously don't want to set it so low that nobody thinks it's worth anything, but I don't want to set it for $1 million and leave it out of reach.
The price of a book varies by a lot of different factors. It's the kind of book that it is, whether it's physical or ebook, hardback or paperback, audiobook. All these have different ways of pricing your book. but it also depends on the trust that the reader has in the author and the value that the reader puts in that book, not the author. Because in this case, the customer's mindset matters the most. It doesn't matter how much you want to sell your book for. If the customer sees that as too much, they won't buy it. So in the exaggerated example of selling a book for $1 million titled How to Make $1 Million, you're not hitting your target audience. One, I don't think anyone's going to pay $1 million for a book.
Maybe if it was like Da Vinci's manuscripts or something.
Yeah, some sort of ancient artifact that is priceless and never to actually be read. So it depends on your audience and what they want.
Under that category, I did want to mention that how your audience uses the book also comes into play. So if it's a coloring book, one person might buy the book more than once. If it's a comic book, it's meant to be read and then tossed over your shoulder so you can consume the next one as fast as possible.
I don't like your version of comic books. Comic books are made to be read and then carefully stored in case they become valuable later on.
Nerd. Another thing to consider as far as how you're using it is if it's a journal or a workbook, so some kind of devotional where you respond to the biblical passage or whatever. And then, of course, if it's educational, that'll also influence it because it's required for school, and so therefore they can charge an arm and a leg for it. So let's get into the pricing of how do you set a price for your book.
Let's start with probably the most expensive type of bookbinding book that you can sell in the fiction and for consumer nonfiction.
We're talking about hardbacks. Often this is the first version to be released, with a paperback coming a few months later, at least for the main author I've been reading lately. There's plenty of that. These tend to be 2 to 3 times the price of your paperback. The last one I purchased was around $30.
Mine was about $35. The thing with a hardback is if you go the traditional publishing route, if you are getting a book published in hardback, it means that you have established yourself as an author, as a trusted author, with a following of people willing to buy your book. Because hardbacks are expensive to produce. Traditional publishers will only invest in a hardback if they know that they're going to get the return on it.
Readers tend to purchase hardbacks for one of two reasons. If you're like me, you purchase it because you want to get it right away. You don't want to wait those extra couple of months for it to be cheaper. You want to be able to read it as fast as possible the moment you can read it. That means getting it in hardback, carrying it with you everywhere you go, and consuming it as quickly and possible as you can.
Readers will also get it because hardbacks are just better. You can see the camp that I'm in. I like hardbacks because they're a little more durable. They, I think, look a lot better than paperbacks do, especially after they've been read. They tend to hold up longer, but they're heavier and a little more unwieldy.
I think most of the people that I know that purchase only hardbacks do it because it's pretty and it goes on the bookshelf, which is why I'm in camp paperback. Because that's not where a book is supposed to be. A book is not supposed to be on the wall. It's supposed to be in my hands.
I mean, really, I'll get any kind, just so long as the series is all in the same format.
There you go.
If you buy one in hardback, the rest have to be hardback. If you buy one in paperback, the rest have to be paperback. Which I have two series that don't match that, and it drives me nuts. One of those is the Stormlight Archive series. I bought the first one paperback, because that's the only thing they had at the time. And then the new ones came out in hardback, and I kept getting them in hardback. I'm missing one of the books.
Really?
Yeah, I'm missing Oathbringer. I got that one in audiobook format only.
Ah.
So I need to get Way of Kings and Oathbringer both in hardback, and I will be satisfied. The other series is The Hunger Games, because, again, I bought the first one before it was popular, so it was just in paperback, and then the rest were released hardback. Hardbacks are going to be more expensive. Like we said, I paid about $35, she paid about $30. I've never seen a hardback for less than about $20.
if you're getting a series all at one time, they're almost always going to be in your hardback format, and so you'll be able to acquire them a little cheaper than the standard. But that's more in the classic category, where it's on your shelf to make you look smart, not necessarily so you can read them.
And of course, I've also paid like $100 for a hardback cover once.
Of a 10-year-old book, by the way.
It was the 10-year anniversary leather-bound of Way of Kings. So, favorite series, amazing, beautiful leather-bound and foil work. And that truly is a display piece. I might read it once just for kicks, but that one is going to be like, this is pretty, and that is its purpose, is to be pretty on my shelf.
So, she likes pretty, I like readable.
Hardbacks are readable. They're durable. That's why I like hardbacks. They're durable.
Okay. She likes pretty and bulletproof. I like usable.
I like ones that you can use as a brick.
We've talked a fair amount about it already, but I wanted to mention pricing separately. Paperbacks tend to be about a third the price of hardbacks. Depending on your genre, especially like my genre of action, mystery, thrillers, and romance novels, those are going to be the ones you pick up at the airport. Those are $10 out the door.
I think the most expensive paperbacks I've seen are about $15, but those are, again, Stormlight Archive series size, where they're huge, they're big, they take a lot of paper in general. I've seen paperbacks range from about $4 to $5 up to about $15.
If you are self-publishing and therefore setting these prices yourself, you do have to take into account for either of these two printing costs, generating the cost of the thing. If it's going to cost you $5 to print, Amazon will not let you price it at $5. Your paperback books are the ones you are loaning to somebody else. If this is that reader's first time experiencing that author, it's almost always going to be in a paperback version of the book. They tend to be about $10. I charge $25 for my series of three. We each charge about $10 for our books to purchase either online or in person, because it's an easy number for bills, mostly.
Paperback is by far the most common printed format because it's cheaper, it's easier, and it's worth the investment for publishers. This also depends on the size of the paperback. Pocket-sized paperbacks I've seen go for as little as about $4, and those are usually in books that have been out for at least 10 years. And then you can get your traditional size for self-publishing, which is the 5x8 size. Most of those go between $7 to $10. And then you can get your monstrosity sizes for books like the Stormlight Archive series, where you have to make it big just so it holds together.
You'll also see your workbooks. Anything that your readers are going to be writing in are going to be in slightly larger format sizes, in which case they might not be priced higher, but you're going to see different ranges in your printing costs. I did also want to mention cookbooks, because they aren't quite hardback and they aren't quite paperback. They're sort of this sturdy tag board kind of thing. Those you'll need a specialty printer for. You're not likely to find that easily.
So let's move on to what is becoming a very, very popular reading format. That is the ebook. These are by far your cheapest options.
These you'll often even find for free. A lot of authors will release one of their ebooks for free in hopes of making it a loss lead, where somebody will read it, they'll fall in love with you as an author, and then purchase your other books. That doesn't always serve you well because of the perceived value versus actual value conversation. But the last time I purchased an ebook, it was about $2.99.
Mine was about $2. I think it was on sale at the time, and it was the first in a series.
When I'm setting my prices for this, I set them at 99 cents because I am happy to take that loss and just let as many people read my books as possible. I am not writing in order to make a profit. I am writing because I enjoy it. I wrote for almost a decade without publishing anything because I didn't care. So pricing for me tends to be a little under market just because it's easier to put it out into the world. People are willing to take a risk for pocket change far more than they are for the cost of a cup of coffee.
Ebooks are also a really good way to do giveaways and help promote your brand because there's no real loss for you. An ebook is free. You may have spent a little bit on the formatting costs or the editing or something like that, but it doesn't actually cost you to print the ebook. It just exists.
Whether you sell a 1 or 100, the price to you is going to be exactly the same. Most of your short story collections and anthologies are going to be in the ebook category, simply because you have a whole bunch of contributors who want to make sure they have it on the shelf. They don't necessarily want to pay for all the printing costs and all of that because they're just trying to get it out there so that people will read something of theirs.
So for the pricing of ebooks, it usually ranges from about $1 to, I think at most I've seen, is about $15. And those upper ranges are only for well-established authors with large books. I have never seen a published ebook do well at more than about $3.
Another option we want to mention, because this is a wildly growing market with a lot of people wanting to read your books this way, and this is via audiobook. If you are listening to our podcast and therefore hearing what I have to say, then you are already part of that market group. Because podcasts are free, but audiobooks are really expensive to make, this is going to change your price dramatically depending on the person putting your audiobook together.
Audiobooks tend to be almost as expensive as hardbacks in some cases because there's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of people that have to contribute to the process of making an audiobook good. Because you have the narrator that needs to get paid, you have the editors and audio editors and producers that need to get paid, and of course the author.
One of the most popular places to get and publish your audiobook is Audible. And on the reader-listener end, if you have a subscription, then you can get one free book a month.
Kind of free. You pay $15, that $15 gets you a credit. And that you can use to buy books. So what I do, because I'm cheap, if it's less than $15, I will buy it on my own. If it's more than $15, I'll buy it with a credit.
Now, most of your bestsellers are going to be in the $18 to $20 range.
Again, depending on the length of the book. I keep referencing the Stormlight Archive because that tends to be the extreme just based on how long it is. Every single one of those audiobooks is around 50 hours long. That is a long time for the narrators to be sitting in a booth talking.
When we made Black and White into an audiobook, it was about 70,000 words, and that was about 11 hours of runtime.
And that's runtime. That's not recording time. So again, this is an expensive way to start. But you need to base your price on the resources you put into it. If you narrate it, which I don't recommend, but you can do.
Unless it's nonfiction, in which case you want to be paired with the knowledge associated with your content.
But if you narrate it, you can set the price lower, which will likely mean you get more people to listen to it because they don't feel like they're putting a major investment into something that's going to turn out maybe not as good as they hoped.
I did want to mention really quickly that if you are advertising for your books, you're going to advertise differently depending on the types of these books that you're selling. That should be wrapped into the prices that you're setting for the book.
By far, one of the most popular places to publish your book is through Amazon's Kindle Direct Publishing. Real quick note here, because I do see this question a lot on online forums. KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing, is not the same as KDP Select. KDP Select is an optional service you can subscribe to per individual book. it gives you a few more resources for advertising and setting different prices on your books, but they are different things. So just publishing through KDP does not have the same exclusivity requirements that KDP Select does.
When you go to set your pricing for your book on Amazon, you're going to run into two major options. In the U.S., that's a 70% option and a 35% option.
This is your royalty plan. You can get 70% of the royalties, which is the profit of a book, by setting it in certain ways. This has more restrictions, but you do get more of the profits.
Your minimum list price for your ebook under that plan is going to be $3.
And the maximum price is $10, $9.99. So you have a very limited range of what you can price your book as, but KDP, Amazon, they have analytics that show books within that range are more likely to sell more, so they are more willing to give you more of the profits. Now, if your main customer base is in Brazil, Japan, Mexico, or India, you must also be enrolled in the KDP Select that I mentioned to get the 70% royalty. But if your customers are elsewhere, you don't need to be enrolled in Select to get the 70% royalty plan.
The other option is you only get 35% of the profits coming in.
You have freedom of pricing with the 35%. You aren't restricted to just $2.99 or max of $9.99. You can set the minimum price as low as 99 cents, which if you're just trying to get your name out there, get people reading your book, this is a good way to do it because people see 99 cents and go, oh, I can invest a dollar because that's not much cost to them to invest in something. Their standards may not be very high for it, but 99 cents is generally a pretty good deal for something.
They also allow you to price match, quote unquote, if your book is being listed for free in digital format somewhere else, then they will price match to free, but they don't like it very much, and they make you go through a bunch of extra hoops to do it. Quick side note, if you choose a 70% option, then your digital book must be at least 20% cheaper than your physical copy.
Which isn't too hard. What I did to help with that is I put my ebook at the minimum list price at $2.99 and my physical book at the maximum price of $9.99. Generally good range. It'll give me the most profits for both books. And both are about prices that people don't mind spending, and it's easy for me to collect at those prices.
So if you haven't had enough math yet, we've done a couple of other episodes on how to approach different types of publishing in our second series that we released last September. And if you have more questions on the different kinds of mediums, we've done an episode on that as well.
The biggest thing to remember about pricing is that it's not really up to you. Yes, it is. You get to set that price. But if your customer base thinks that that is too expensive, it doesn't matter what you set the book at, you're not going to get any profits if the book doesn't sell. So remember to keep your readers in mind while you're setting the price. What would you be willing to pay on a book of the same quality? What would you be willing to pay for an ebook, for a hardback, for a paperback? Keep these things in mind as you're doing this. It is a lot of math. It is a little bit of work. And look at what you want out of it. Are you like me who, yeah, I kind of like a little bit of the extra profit, mostly to cover the cost that I put into publishing? Or are you like Lee, where the cost doesn't matter, you just want to get your story out there because that's what matters, is the story, the creation. If you have gone the whole process doing what we always tell you, continue to do that even in the publishing, even in the pricing. Because what you should always do is
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
she was of divine stock, not of men, in the forepart a lion, in the hinder a serpent, and in the midst a goat, breathing forth in terrible wise the might of a blazing fire. Homer's Iliad.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Essis, and that only took us 7 tries.
Just about. Our episode today is about the oldest kind of monster. The name is not quite so old, but we are using the term chimera for all of those monsters that are a mix of something.
Chimera tend to be monsters that are half this, half that, or part this, middle part this, end part this, like our quote suggested. But the oldest monster on record, as best we can tell, was the Löwenmensch, which is half man, half lion. I believe it was German. So I think the lion was mountain lion. But it doesn't take a whole lot of imagination to try to figure out how to create a monster if you're just taking Lego bits from this one and Lego bits from that one and sort of mashing them together.
And that really is what a chimera is. The term chimera comes from Homer's Iliad. That's kind of the earliest written record of it. But it's just a mix. And the reason why they're considered monsters is because they were seen as unnatural. Because they were a combination of things that should never be together, they should be feared.
Yeah, you see a lot of the mammal mixed with bird, mixed with humanoid, mixed with serpentine in some regard. If you have something that's somewhere between a cat and a dog, okay, that's not as terrifying as something somewhere between a cat and a hunting spider, because they're more separate.
And there's also a little subcategory of a chimera that tend to be riddlers, and we'll talk about the Sphinx a little bit later in this episode. So let's get into examples. One of the most common types of a chimera is a half-human of some kind.
Of course, the first thing that comes to mind is centaurs and fauns. As somebody who grew up reading The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, fauns were a large part of my imagination. But you also have in Eastern cultures the Tengu, which are a human-bird combination. There are a couple of different names for that, but that's the one that I learned first.
In Western cultures, adopted from Persia, was the manticore, where it's seen as having a human head, the body of a lion, and the tail of either a scorpion or a porcupine.
I think the second's more terrifying.
Uh-huh. Especially in some of the descriptions I was reading, is that it would shoot out the spines from the tail and then regrow them almost instantly.
This needs to be in a movie at some point. You put it in your book, let me know. I want to see this.
Yes. And then, of course, you also...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.